Welcome to the Sheridan Report, brought to you by MyBookie.ag. Make sure you go to MyBookie.ag. You can go to thegruelytruth.net, click on the banner at the top of the page. It'll take you to MyBookie.ag, and if you do it through our website, it'll give you up to a $1,000 cash bonus. If you put in $2,000, you get a grand back. If you put in $500, you get $250 back. So it's a 50% cash bonus. I'm your host, Mike Goodpasser. Right now, I'd like to welcome from the Sheridan Report, Bobby Sheridan. How you doing, Bobby?
Hey, Mike, I'm doing great. Good morning to you. And you got two more ball games there in Dayton, is that correct?
Yep, two more games today, and then we will move on from there. Let's go ahead and start off. What's your NBA top play tonight?
Oh, well, tonight, Mike, I think we have a really good one. We've got the Sixers tonight, who have lost 17 of the last 19 regular season games with Boston. But tonight, going to this game with a decided edge, you know, they're minus -3 at home in this spot. And Joel Embiid comes back to the lineup. They win four straight, dominant fashion, with their A lineup on the court. That includes getting Tobias Harris. They're 8-1, crushing their opponents. Boston, we all know, has struggled and lost some depth, losing Gordon Hayward. He'll be out again tonight. They haven't played really to their potential all year, but they've owned Philadelphia. But getting back to the Sixers, Embiid in back-to-backs to end the season here is only going to play one of the games. And their coach said, you know what, pick the game. And he picked to sit out yesterday. Well, we didn't care. They're playing Charlotte, and that was actually fine. And we had Philadelphia as a top play yesterday, and we got that one. And Embiid's picking Boston, and he wants this game, and so do the Sixers. They need to prove that they can beat Boston, and they want to beat Boston. It's been too long coming, 17-19, and Embiid did say it was his decision which game he wanted to play, and he's got work to do against Boston. That was his quote. And J.J. Redick's quote was, "It's always a big game when we play Boston. I think psychologically, too, we need to figure out how to beat these guys." So this is not just a regular season game tonight. This is a little bit more, and one team's playing a lot better than the other, and one team's getting their big cog back tonight in the middle, and he's outstanding. If he didn't have his injuries, he'd be in the MVP discussion, that's for sure, because his value on the court is as much to them as anybody's. I guess Harden's right there too. But anyhow, we love the Sixers tonight. It's only three, and I think they should win fairly comfortably.
All right. Anything else NBA-wise you want to discuss?
Well, we do have a free play that we put out there on the internet and the website and on the Twitter, I should say. And it's lost three in a row, you know, but we've had a lot of success with this. I love it. The Heat are getting 6.5 tonight over the Spurs. And it actually is the game I really want to watch tonight. Those are two hot teams, and I want to see how that game plays out. But I do have a strong opinion on the Heat, and they're getting 6.5 points.
All right, and the Spurs are one of the best home teams. The Heat have been hot lately, so it should be one of the better games of the night, I would think.
I agree. You know, and we've mentioned previously many times that the Heat and their road prowess, they play really well on the road, and they're really athletic, and they're going to be able to defend San Antonio really well tonight. And that's the key to me, is their ability to defend San Antonio and hold them lower to what they've been scoring, much lower. And the Heat are now in full gear, and, you know, they're going to probably bow out in the first round in Milwaukee. But this team's played really well here at the end of the year, and I like them tonight.
All right. What about college basketball?
College basketball, Mike, we've got one play I'll give away, and this could have easily been a top play. I chose not to list it as a top play, but it's in the NIT, and I like Nebraska over Butler tonight. I Nebraska has a coach that has been rumored to be fired. I think his last name is Miles. And, you know, usually when coaches are going to get fired, and, you know, there's usually a good reason for it. But you couldn't tell by the way they're playing. Nebraska is finishing their year like they started it. And they're playing very strong. And, you know, they've won three or four of the last five. And a couple of those victories included were some, I don't have it pulled up, I'm going off of memory, but were some impressive wins over some good squads in the Big Ten. So I think Nebraska will handle Butler. And there you go yesterday, the two home teams and the games that we talked about, both won. Nebraska's at home, and Butler's off of a disappointing year. So it all adds up to me. But that's not the top play, but could have been. I really like them. The top play will go to the NCAA play-in game. And that, you know, is a Pac-12 team. And, you know, if you guys are starting to understand a little bit about where I'm looking at some of this stuff, the Pac-12 has been really ridiculed throughout the year, and there's good reason why that conference struggled this year. And we've talked about that on the, I think it was the Survive Advance show, but it may have been our show, Mike. We talked about why that was. And this is a very unique opportunity in this game here because Arizona State's in the exact same position they were last year. Arizona State was in the first four game last year playing a Big East school. And last year they took on, I believe, Syracuse, and they lost 60-56. Most of that team is back, and they added a freshman named Dort, who has led them in many of the categories. And it's Bobby Hurley's second chance at getting this done. And Arizona State played Oregon as well as Oregon's been played the last 3 weeks. In fact, they really could have beat them. And they were really the only team that has scored on Oregon in that time frame since Oregon has put together their run. And Arizona State's got a big shot in this game. And then they get Buffalo. You know, I believe they can get to the 32. I definitely think Oregon can. All they have to do is beat Wisconsin. And Washington has an opportunity, too. The Pac-12 could wind up with three in the 32. And the reason I like the Pac-12 is because they're underrated to the line right now. Because everybody and their brother has downplayed that league, and for good reason. But these three teams are playing good ball, and you're getting good value with the line. And it starts tonight. I think Arizona State wins that ball game tonight. And they're only favorite 1.5 over St. John's.
All right. My bookie right now, it's -2. Anything else you want to discuss betting-wise for today?
Just real quickly, we have a brand new Early Risers ATP tournament starting. And last week, we won 6 of 7 days on the Early Risers. That includes the PGA matchups. And, you know, we finished it off with Dominic Thiem beating Roger Federer at 3-1. Our Sunday alone was over 6 units. So, you know, here we go again. Early Risers are starting today. They're at the Miami Open, played at the Hard Rock. They've put up a brand new tennis facility there inside that complex and in Florida, and it's going to open today. And I have two matchups I'll just give away. One is a 1 o'clock Pacific, and one is at 4:05 Pacific. So you still have plenty of time. And that's Misha Zverev. That's the brother of the great Alex Zverev. But this is Misha at +$1.25 over Kuhn and Jarry. Jarry +$1.45 over Chardy. Now, these aren't premier matchups, but we're just looking for winners, and we think we'll split there at the very least. We'll split and make a little profit, and then sometimes that's how it goes. And I want to mention one other thing, Mike, if I can. I don't normally talk about final scores because it's all about the next day with me. It's all about yesterday doesn't matter. We don't gloat too much and don't pout too much, but I do want to mention the Major League Baseball season opened up early in the morning, 5:30 on the East Coast, and Seattle was a winner. They won 9-7, and we had Seattle. Baseball is our bread and butter, Mike, and we're not going to win every game. Of course not. It's a long season, but I bring this up as an example. Seattle opened at +$1.20 and closed at $1.40 underdog. We had them at $1.40, and we had the parlay to the over. And how I looked at this two-game series, and this is just a tutelage for the listeners and how I bet baseball because we have baseball coming up, I felt like Seattle had probably a better than 85 to 90% chance to at least split this series based on what my in research into this two-game series. And they're going to be an underdog in both games. So if you split the two-game series, you'll make a little bit of a profit. And if you hit both, which I think was much more likely than Oakland winning both, then you've got he's got something working there. So we're playing for free tomorrow, or we don't even have to play. We've already hit the winner today. So it's all about finding the value on the money line, Mike. That's what it's all about. And no more prevalent does that happen than in baseball. And personally, in my knowledge, it's no more prevalent than in baseball. So we got some good things coming up, and we kicked off 2019 in style. We had Seattle last night with the win. So,
all right, Bobby, we are going to take a quick commercial break, and then we will come back with On This Day. We'll be right back with the Sheridan Report right after this message.
Hi, I'm Mike Goodpasser from the Grueling Truth Sports Network, and I'm here with just one simple message. If you're watching the games, it's time to start making money. The Grueling Truth has recently partnered with MyBookie.ag, an industry-leading sportsbook website, who reminds you that where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. And that's why the Grueling Truth urges you to check out MyBookie.ag. In addition to the usual thousands of odds, money lines, proposition bets, and futures offered on MyBookie.ag daily, they also have in-game live betting and a mobile site that makes wagering on the go easier than ever. So join now, and MyBookie will give you up to a free $1,000 cash bonus on your first deposit. Just enter promo code TGT50, that's TGT50, to take advantage of this offer. You can also go to thegruelingtruth.net, click the banner at the top of the page for MyBookie.ag, and also get the same benefit and the same $1,000 free cash bonus on your first deposit. So visit MyBookie.ag, courtesy of The Grueling Truth, and enjoy winning today. MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid.
All right, guys, we're back on the Sheridan Report. I'm Mike Goodpasser, sitting here with Bobby Sheridan. Bobby, what's our On This Day?
Oh, Mike, On This Day, you know, this is a pretty special one in baseball. In 1973, on this day, Roberto Clemente was elected to the Hall of Fame, and it was 11 weeks after his death, in the plane crash. And I wanted to know if you could shed some light on that moment.
Yeah. I mean, number one, you usually have to wait 5 years. They didn't make Clemente wait 5 years. And I think over the course of history, I think people have kind of forgotten about how great a player he was. I mean, he had a lifetime batting average of, I think, .317, played in 15 All-Star games, two World Series, including 1971, when he was the MVP of that World Series. And that was a series where it was 3-2 going to Baltimore, and Clemente and that Pittsburgh pitching staff really made the difference here. And this was a guy that I think won 4 or 5 batting titles, 12 Golden Gloves, and I think those 12 were in a row. He was a part of that great 1960 World Series where the Yankees won 3 by blowouts. The Pirates won 4 close games to get there. But when you look at Clemente, the way he got there, I mean, was a little bit unexpected because the Dodgers actually signed him, and they signed him when they went down to look at what the hell was the guy's name? They went down to look at another player, though, who they ended up signing. And
did not know.
Yeah, and they found him, and the thing was, in those 3 he hardly played at all, and there was a scout there that I think, what the hell was his name? I think his name was like Clyde Solcroft or something, but he went down and watched this team play because he was looking at, I can't remember the guy's name. I think his last name was Black. I think it was Joe Black. They came down, they looked at Joe Black, and they saw Clemente throwing and batting in pregame drills, and he hardly played in the 3 at all. But they went ahead and signed him off of watching him just throw the ball around and hit BP. And he had a lot of difficulties when he signed with the Dodgers. He went to Montreal. And the story is you had Chico Fernandez and pitchers Joe Black and Tommy Lasorda, who were the guys that took him under their wings. And within a year, he's in the major leagues. And when you look at him, I think the thing that's really undervalued about him is offensively and defensively, he was one of the best players. He played in 12 straight Major League Baseball All-Star games. And when you compare him to a guy like Pete Rose, it's not even close on who the better player was. But, of course, everybody wants to jump on the Pete Rose bandwagon. But Roberto Clemente, to me, is up there with the Willie Mazes and the Mickey Mantles and the Babe Ruth. I think he's one of the greatest players of all time. And you talked about the accident. His last at bat is when he got his 3,000th hit. And he did a lot of charity work in Latin America and Caribbean countries. And I think there was like an earthquake or a hurricane in Nicaragua. And he was headed down there, and it was like December 31st of 1972. He was headed down there to help with humanitarian aid and to go help those people. And his plane crashed en route to going to Nicaragua, and he passed away. He was only 38 years old. I don't think he was done playing yet. And I think, for my money, there's a lot of great Pittsburgh Pirates, but he might have been the best.
Oh, man, Mike. I mean, yeah, I mean, I agree with you on that. And what an arm he had. And am I wrong, or did he come up a shortstop and convert it to the outfield? I don't know about that.
I'm not sure. I don't remember that. I just remember what I read off these baseball cards. Because, you know, when I was little, like 1975, 76, I had all these baseball cards, and my sister loved baseball too, and she was collecting baseball cards in the 60s, and I remember I would memorize everything on the backs of these cards, and I would sit there all day and just organize them and put them into each individual team, and I had thousands of these things. But I just remember I memorized the back of baseball cards. Hell, if you ever have an on this day for Biff Pokoroba, the old backup catcher for the Braves, I could do that. So I still remember Oscar Gamble. I think it was his 1976 card where it said traded, and he had the huge fro. And I remember I always hated Oscar Gamble because almost every pack of baseball cards I opened, there was one of those Oscar Gamble cards in the damn thing. I think I had like 30 of them. And you remember back in the day, you go mid-late 70s, hell, our big thing was if it was raining outside, I'd go to my buddy's house or my buddy would come to my house and we'd flip baseball cards.
Yeah, and meanwhile, destroying the value of them.
Oh, yeah, you destroyed the value. But see, I didn't because we didn't bend them. You just flipped it. And because see, I knew even back then that someday they'd be worth some money. And I did in like 1980 or 89 sell most of them for like $2,000 or $3,000. I bought a car with them. But I did keep a couple hundred of them, especially like the old Cincinnati Reds cards. So I've still got those. Both my sons have a box each in their rooms. And my older son was a baseball player, and he loved looking at them too when he was little. But once they hit like 10 or 11 years old, they didn't care anymore. But still, I mean, you remember the old Topps gum that was so hard it almost break your teeth when it came out?
Great.
Yeah. Every once in a while you'd get a soft piece and you wonder what the hell they did to it.
Yeah, exactly, to get it soft. And remember when you get the duplicates? We used to call them doubles. Did you call them doubles?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we call them doubles. And when they came out with the Beckett guide, that was the name of the, I guess, the guy.
Beckett guide. There was also like a baseball card magazine, too, that started coming out in like the early 80s, right. I remember also.
Right. And about the last, around the ending of my baseball card stuff was in 1989 or 90. It was 90, I think. Upper Deck came up with these great looking cards that just kind of outdid Topps in terms of how they looked. And they used Ken Griffey Jr. as their first card. He was player number one in the very first year, and he wound up being a Hall of Famer. And you know, that card, I think certain grades of that card, you know, grade Jim Mint 10 grade, I think some of those cards, you know, are still going for $2,000, $3,000, $4,000. But
yeah, and
pretty good card.
See, I remember this. There was a drugstore called Ulrich's in Aurora, Indiana. And like in the mid-70s, late-70s, what I would do is I would save my extra lunch money. And if I went down there with like a dollar, I could buy 10 packs of baseball cards. And I mean, today, I know when my son bought baseball cards when he was like 7, 8 years old, it'd be like $3.25 for a pack and it'd have like 8 in it. And back then, exactly. You could spend 10 cents, you get like 10 to 12. And then I remember I loved it because I think in 1981, Donruss and then Flair right after that started coming out with cards too. So you had three separate kinds. I even collected basketball cards because they had NBA cards. So I've even still got some of them around here somewhere.
Well, if you got a Jordan rookie or a Bird rookie, then you can sell that sucker and you'll get more than a car.
Well, my favorite card was a Walt Clyde Frazier card. You remember the New York Knicks? And actually,
oh, yeah,
through like sixth grade, I had a Walt Frazier card in my wallet.
You know, that guy, you can still hear him on the Knicks broadcast, am I right?
Yeah.
Pretty sure that's Clyde Frazier. He's still smooth as can be, even announcing the games. And hopefully the Knicks can give him a little bit more to announce for next year, you know, when they dip into this free agency. But, Mike, do we have time for one more quick one?
Sure.
Good, because, you know, my favorite is always to get your boxing takes. And, you know, this is a pretty big one. I know we've talked a lot about Mike Tyson, but now we're getting into earlier Tyson. And tell me if I'm wrong. I think when he beats Tubbs in two rounds for the heavyweight title, that was his first title, right? 1988?
No, 1986 against Trevor Burbick was his first title fight.
Oh, okay, so this isn't his first. Okay, so talk to me about 88. Tyson KO's Tony Tubbs in two for the heavyweight title.
Well, and they did this in Japan. So this is the precursor to what would happen in 1990 when, Buster Douglas done whooped his ass. And the other thing about Tony Tubbs is this. Tony Tubbs was sandwiched between a January win over Larry Holmes and then, of course, the June win over Michael Spinks. So he was fighting 3-4 times a year, and that's the way it was done because you got to keep him out of trouble. The best way to keep him out of trouble is to keep him fighting. And he went over to Japan. He fought Tony Tubbs. This was, let's see. Yeah, that was 1988. Yeah.
And 88, today's date. Today's date, 88.
Now, the interesting thing is this was Japan's second ever world heavyweight title fight. The first world heavyweight title fight, if I remember, in Japan was a guy by the name of Jose King Roman, who got knocked out in the first round by George Frazier, I think, or George Foreman. That was George Foreman's, I think, first title defense after he beat Joe Frazier. And going into the fight, Tyson was already scheduled to fight Michael Spinks June 27th. So that'll tell you how confident they were that they were going to beat, you know, Michael, or beat Tony
right.
Tubbs. Tony Tubbs was a guy from Cincinnati who was a great boxer, who had a great amateur career, but for some reason, he won a portion of the title by beating Greg Page in 1985, I think it was. It was 84 or 85 in Buffalo, New York. They had to fight there. He won that, came back, lost it to Tim Witherspoon. And this is also the time for Tyson where he had married Robin Givens a month before this. So this is right before all the shit went down. And,
yeah,
you know, she messed with Tyson's brain and everything and messed him up. And Tyson was huge in Japan. I mean, he was a mystical figure there. And he goes to Japan,
yeah,
and he fights this fight. And Tony Tubbs actually did well in the first round because Tony Tubbs was like a fat, out-of-shape version of what Buster Douglas did a couple years later. But the problem was Tyson catches Tubbs towards the end of the second round, knocks him down, and I don't think Tubbs wanted to deal with it anymore. And Tubbs is a guy that, like I said, was a very talented guy, but mentally, I just don't think he was able to deal with fighting Mike Tyson. And mentally, he really wasn't able to deal with fighting big fights. I mean, if you look at Tubbs's career, he had some good performances. I mean, he was a partial heavyweight champion. He fought all the way up into 2006. Actually, I'm friends with his brother, Nate, who's a promoter over here in Cincinnati. But if you look at his career, like 7 years after that, he fights Alexander Zolkin for the NAB heavyweight title, lost a close decision to James Thunder, who was a good fighter, beat Everett Martin. He had a win over Tyrell Biggs, who was a gold medalist, Jose Ribalta, who I've interviewed on the show before. He beat Jesse the Body Snatcher Ferguson. He beat Bruce Seldon, who Mike Tyson beat, I think, shortly, a few years after that. He actually went the distance with Riddick Bowe about 3 years after the Mike Tyson fight. But if you look at it, he had lost the title, I think, in 86 to Tim Witherspoon after he'd beaten Greg Page to win it. And after losing to Witherspoon, his weight ballooned up. And the story, the most interesting story of the Tyson-Tubbs fight is Tony Tubbs had something written into the contract where if he came in at 200 and I think 32 pounds or less, he would get like a quarter of a million dollar bonus, and his fat ass still weighed 238 pounds. Didn't even get the bonus.
No. Yeah.
So that'll tell you that you have some issues.
Yeah, it will. Well, good info there, Mike. And I thought that was the first one, and I was wrong. So 86, and then this was 88, right in the room, Robin Gibbons' time. And Mike Tyson wouldn't be the first guy to be taken down by a female. So.
Probably not the first one taken down by the Gibbons clan. So the mom was probably worse than Robin, but they were conniving ladies.
Yes.
And if you throw that in with good. Mike Tyson and Donald Trump, Mike Tyson didn't have a chance.
No, he didn't. Don King, you mean? Don King.
No, I mean, I said Don King, didn't I? Don King and Donald Trump.
You said Donald Trump.
Yeah, because Donald Trump, wait a second now, Donald Trump was the casino to host site. They fought the Tyson Spinks fight at Trump's Taj Mahal.
Oh, see, I should never question you, should I?
And this is the thing. If you go back and watch the video of that fight and you watch the pre-fight, Donald Trump, Don King, and Robin Gibbons and her mom all sat together in the front row.
Oh, my gosh. And he's the president of our United States now. That's amazing.
Well, he's the president of your United States, maybe. But listen.
In
my
know.
United
in
States, George Washington's still the president. But
right.
All right, Bobby.
Oh, man.
We're going to wrap it up. And I want to remind everybody, go to thegruelingtruth.net, click on the My Bookie banner to get a 50% bonus up to $1,000. Make sure you go check out the Sheridan Report at Sheridan Report on Twitter or to SheridanReport.com, where you can buy a month or a daily subscription of $10 a day to get the Sheridan Report or $50 a month for 30 days. That's the better value, I think. So make sure you go check it out, combine the two, make a little bit of money. Make your wife happy, unless your wife's Robin Gibbons, and she's taking your money anyway, so you might as well just regret it. It's better than giving it to her. All right, guys, we're going to wrap it up, and I want to remind everybody you can hear all of our shows on Spotify, iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, wherever you find sports podcasts, you'll find The Grueling Truth. So for Bobby Sheridan, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.